This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hey, the weekend has landed.
The weekend starts here.
The weekend starts here. Something for the weekend, sir. Nice. Well, if you're not listening to it now, you'll have to wait till Monday because then it becomes a podcast. Press that punch and like that subscribe. So you're listening to Fan Club. My name is Nick Helm. This is
Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Fan Club. First rule of Fan Club is please tell your mates about Fan Club. Thank you for the water. tell your friends about Fan Club. Second rule of Fan Club is please tell your friends about Fan Club. Third rule of Fan Club. Tell your friends about Fan Club. Fourth rule of Fan Club. Hey, tell your friends about Fan Club. And fifth rule. Tell your friends about Fan Club. Hit that retweet and press that. Do you know what? The likes on Twitter don't count as much as the retweets.
They don't. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not the same thing.
I can't hear you in my ears.
I can't hear me in my ears. Maybe my thing isn't plugged in.
Can we hear something?
Actually, it's just my. I think everyone can hear. I think I've just got a dodgy headphone.
You've got a dodgy headphone.
I've got a dodgy headphone.
Well, why can't I hear you?
Oh, if I gotta use these headphones.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Nah, your headphones don't affect my headphones.
Hello, can you hear me now?
I can.
Well, yeah, that doesn't actually make any sense, does it?
Maybe you should speak. Hang on. Oh, God, hang on. That doesn't make sense.
So I'm talking through a different set of headphones now.
All right.
Is that why?
Do they only affect us in the room, though? Oh, right. That's brilliant. Thank you, Natalie.
I'm glad you could hear us.
You're not always helpful, but today you've smashed it. So we're back, guys. There was a couple, I don't know if you picked up, but there were a couple of technical difficulties there that got in the way of the show. But we'll continue as we mean to go on. Sixth rule of Fan Club is tell your friends about Fan Club. The likes don't count as much as the retweets, I have to say. You get that a lot with comedians, though, don't you?
Yeah,
Where you say, I've got a tour coming up, and you get a lot of comedians, and they'll come along and they'll like it. And you go, that doesn't help me, Ramesh. That fucking doesn't help me.
I like that you're on tour.
With your, 300,000 followers, and you've liked it, that's not going to mean nothing, is it? A fucking retweet. Hey, that might shift them, although my audience is very different from his audience. that's just how it works. I'm not mainstream. I've come to accept that. But not like this show, eh?
Because is a mainstream show.
We've rocketed all the way up the iTunes charts.
We have.
We're not like in the top five, like drunk women and your Brett Goldsteins and your Richard Herrings.
But are we in top six?
We're not in the top six even, mate.
Top seven?
No, we're niche. we're niche and we're happy to be there. But what I would say is that cunt that fucking gave us a 3-star review, he's only gone and fucking changed it to 5.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I'm glad I've intimidated and bullied someone
into giving us a better iTunes rating. So now we're currently up to 83.
And if anyone else wants to try and give us a lower than 5-star
rating. The thing is, I don't give a shit if you give us 5 stars. I don't give a shit if you give us 5 stars, yeah? I don't want a fucking review off anyone. Right? Do you think I do this for the fucking reviews? How fucking pathetic do you think I am, right? Like, I can't get out of bed unless I've got some fucking 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah. Right? I would never fucking stoop so low like those other podcasts to ask for a fucking 5-star review on fucking iTunes.
Rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate and review us on iTunes, please. Really, sincerely, can you please, when you're listening to the podcast, can you go on to iTunes for us, please? Just pause it for a second. And do you think you could put 5 stars on there, please? And maybe write us a little comment and say how much you liked it. I don't fucking think so. Wouldn't be caught dead saying please. It does mean a lot.
If you want to, though, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to break into your house and stop you doing it.
Not going to stop you from wasting your time. Not mine, because I'm not doing it. Although I have done it. I did that quite early on, actually, gave it a 5-star. Didn't write a review, but if you deleted the review that I was just about to read out. Oh, it's gone. It's gone. Anyway, we had a nice
there we
one.
There we go.
So all new ones are 5 stars, so that's good. Therapy by Sarah J511. She sounds like one of the droids from Star Wars. I have listened to this pod... where's the music? I have listened to... I have listened to this podcast from the first episode. Another reason to look forward to Fridays. Guaranteed to cheer me up after yet another stressful week at work. Thank you, Nick and Nat. Loving your work. I Loved It by I Am Robot. On a par with my recent 3-star trip to Alton Towers. This is the cunt that that has changed it to a 5.
But is his name I Am Robot?
I hope so, because that's my favourite movie.
Spoiler!
I was going to save, actually, that revelation to the end of the show, so technically was a spoiler. do we have any other reviews? I quite enjoyed doing that. Do you know what? Send in your reviews and we'll read them out every week, because that actually was the least cringy way of doing it.
Yes, yeah.
Not that we have to do it at all.
No, we don't. It's quite nice.
Now that we're up to 2 hours, though, there is a very severe need to come up with content. So, I don't know if you've listened back, but if you listen back to the first 20 episodes, it was like listening to Benny Hill do a podcast. And by that, I mean it was like listening to a podcast in fast forward. But now it's very, very slowed down. That's good. I keep expecting... We have fan mail. We do have fan mail.
Oh, yes, we do.
So we've had a lovely... do you know what? I'm just... can you take over a second now? I'm just going to take my headphones off and then my jumper off and then I'm going to pop my headphones back on. But for that amount of time...
And your jumper back on?
No, not going to put my jumper back on, mate. Okay. That would defeat the purpose of taking off in the first place, won't it?
I see. Right, hello, listeners. We've got a couple of things in the fan club fan mail. Fan mail sounds too self-congratulatory, isn't it?
I'm back. Sorry about that, listeners. So, just to highlight, it's not our fan club.
No. It's a fan club for... No, it's not even a fan club. It's a place where fans of different things can gather and... talk about it.
I guess we've hit that level of success and fame that Alf Garnett did, didn't he? Whereas originally he was a pastiche on racists, but then he became so popular that the racists started joining in and loved him even more than the regular people at home. And I guess that's what's happened with us.
We've not become racists.
I haven't. but what's happened with us is that we set up a show just thinking like-minded individuals would just talk about stuff that we like. And the last thing either of us were expecting was for us to be elevated to be as beloved and on a par as such legends as Steve Martin. But
it's happened.
It's happened. We've had 2 pieces of fan mail this week.
Inundated. Mail sacks have been literally a bit full.
We've been inundated with fan mail. With a fan mail.
Guys, we can't write back to everyone. But what we can do is give you... have the 20 minutes out of a week that we can need to write back, I'm afraid.
So you read this one out.
Hello, Nick and Nathaniel. I really enjoy listening to your show every week, and it's become my favourite show, stroke podcast.
Oh, that's nice.
When I was young, I was a member of 4 fan clubs. The first one was the Beano fan club. The best thing about it was the Nasher badge.
A Nasher badge?
Yeah. That's a dog, Dennis and Menace's dog.
I was a fan club with a magazine and I got a Nasher badge. It was an adult publication. But continue.
in homage to that badge and your favourite show, I have created you fan club badges. They seem to have gone a bit Judge Doom after the addition of the googly eyes, but I hope they amuse you. Do you know what? They do amuse me, and they do look a bit like Nasher the dog from the Beano, Dennis the Menace.
And a little bit like...
He's even done a comparison of Nasher badge and a photo of the badges in case the postal services
destroy
them.
And a bit like Judge Doom. I've just turned it down. Is that what you want?
And that is from Dave Russell. Thank you very much, Dave. And Dave's also put a little note in for Natalie that says, thank you for your help with the FUBAR address and passing them on to Nick and Nathaniel. I hope you appreciate it. Thanks again, Dave.
That's a nice little shout out to
Natalie.
To Natalie. I'm struggling to remember what all these buttons do.
Oh. They've also included a couple of little pads to take your makeup off, which I guess was to stop them from damaging. But when I touch them, they feel odd and they make my hand make me worry what was in the package.
They're also very good for when you're jogging and if your nipples rub against the fabric of your top.
Oh, yeah.
If you just pop one of them over each one, then it reduces the chafe.
How do you affix them?
It's just a bit of lick.
Bit of lick, sellotape.
I've got a bit.
Thank you very much, Dave. Have you got any more fan mail, Nick?
I've got a fan letter here. Dear Nick and Nat, hope you like your hashtag fan club cross stitch. Hashtag Dear Nick and Nat.
Nick and Nat's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
Dear Nick and Nat, hope you like your hashtag fan club cross stitch. I don't know who will get custody.
It's like Kramer versus Kramer.
Love the show. It's like talking to my mates in a pub about movies, but with better and more correct opinions, obviously. Exclamation mark.
Better mates.
Have a good show, Rachel, a.k.a. Harkati Punctus. I read it all the time on Twitter, Rachel, but I've never said it out loud. I feel ill. I've been up all night. Right.
Nick has tonsillitis.
I've got tonsillitis.
This is lovely, this cross-stitch.
Rachel's done a cross-stitch of... and she's very good at cross-stitch. It's not the first piece of cross-stitch that I've received off Rachel. It's a thumbs up, which is basically... I wouldn't say that we invented it, but we've certainly made it popular again.
Yeah, brought it back. Paul McCartney, he's done the two fingers, hasn't he? The sort of peace thing. He's brought that into popularity.
I would say Ringo did the two fingers.
Ringo did the two fingers.
George did the hands together praying thing.
Yes.
John Lennon did the two fingers peace sign as well, really. I guess that's joint custody between John and George.
Yeah.
But Paul McCartney did contribute as well. He did the...
he does it now, doesn't he? Often
he did the thumbs up, didn't he?
Yeah.
Thumbs up. Not a spiritual, but... Anyway, so we've got a cross-stitch
really
thumbs up.
He popularised praying, didn't he, George Harrison?
Well, no one really prayed before Georgie came along. Mm. So there's...
The time I was born, we were doing it in schools.
We used to sing... can we just finish this bit? For fuck's sake. So it's a picture of a thumb... and then underneath it says that's fan club. So I think who wants to take it home?
Well, I'll have it. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think I might take it home.
Well, why should you have it? It's as much mine as yours, isn't it?
So. Yeah, but I think that I've got more wall space than you, and. I think
I'll just grab it.
No, it's mine. It's my. Oh. Not only is it ripped in half, but someone's called the bloody police.
That's worked out well. We can both get it.
It was Nat. Oh, God. I should tell you what, the budget's gone up this week. So what were we going to say? We used to sing Beatles songs in school because
really?
I think it was because we came. It was so I went to Parkwood Primary School in Finsbury Park, and it was multicultural, and I think that you couldn't really go. Well, you couldn't do Christian songs, and you mm-hmm. couldn't. I don't think you could pick any religion and just ram that down everyone's throat. So I think what they did was they just did a show of hands, and everybody hated the Beatles. So we sang them.
Which Beatles songs did you sing?
Yellow Submarine.
Okay. Yeah,
and,
that's a nice one.
And maybe Let It Be or something. Nat, can you please pull the mic closer?
Certainly can.
Nat, can you please pull the microphone close to your mouth? That's from Natalie in the sound booth.
I thought I was being particularly loud, but maybe my headphones are loud.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Anyway, we haven't really started yet, but if you're new to the show, this is it. Don't expect anything. It's not really. There'll be some chit-chat, and we've got some guests coming along. That's the first time I've ever felt that I'm on antibiotics. So we had... okay.
It's tough to get them now, isn't it?
How do we... antibiotics?
Yeah, you don't get them now. Don't get them for nothing.
Well, you actually got to... I mean, I've got one of them corpse sweats on... You know you're wet and damp to the touch.
Oh yeah.
Like a corpse. You either get that when you're ill or in Edinburgh. You know. But it's one of those things where you're always you're constantly slightly moist all over. It's very uncomfortable. But I've had quite a big... So we pre-recorded last week's episode, and so a lot has happened this week. We should probably start rattling through all the things we've done. Let's start with the big one. We both went to see Creed 2.
Yeah, we went to see Creed 2 separately.
Not together. I went with Mark Simmons, actually.
I went by myself, but I'll tell you, listeners,
Christ.
In the screening room with me was Lorraine Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty exciting. And I'd say Lorraine Kelly certainly lives up to... her TV persona by seemingly being absolutely delightful to people, being very lovely, and was having a chat with people.
Not during the film.
Not during the film, no.
What a cunt. Jesus Christ, Lorraine. Fucking hell.
Before the film.
We had to see men punching each other.
She was having a chat with someone and found out that their husband was from Dundee and was asking them about their husband. And I thought, what a nice woman. Then she came and sat next to me, and I thought, well, I was just on my phone, so I didn't really say anything.
She sat next to you?
Well, she was just moving around. She kept moving around.
Oh, God. What, before the screening?
Before the screening, yeah.
What, like people had come to see Lorraine?
No, it wasn't. I think she was fairly incognito. She was all right. She seemed all right.
Fairly incognito? What, once she'd introduced herself to everyone in the audience? How many people in the audience?
Only about eight or something.
Yeah, eight. And once she's introduced herself to everyone in the audience...
She wasn't introducing herself. She just...
She didn't need to. She was Lorraine Kelly.
That's it. People went, oh, it's Lorraine Kelly. Yeah, yeah.
We all know her from the Wayfair adverts.
She seemed very nice. I think she's probably a very nice person.
I sat next to Graham Norton at a screening once.
Oh, yeah.
I know people would probably assume that because we're all comedians, we know each other, but I've never met him before. It was Eye in the Sky. It was Alan Rickman's last film. And he came in. Yeah, we know. We haven't got there yet. Unbelievable. Eye in the Sky.
I've seen it.
Are you surprised every week at what the show is? We haven't talked about Creed 2 yet.
We're doing the build up.
We're building up. Get on with it. I'm trying to, but you keep interrupting with typing. So Graham Norton, he came in to Eye in the Sky. The screening had started. He came in 30 seconds, you know, during all the logos.
Oh, yeah. That's all right, not too late.
Hat down. He sort of like ducked and ran under the screen and then sat on the front row next to me. And then at the end of it, just as the credits, he did the same thing on his way out, put his hat back on and he ran out. Nobody knew it was him. I knew.
Did everyone notice him?
Nobody knew it was him. Nobody even noticed he came. It was the most subtle thing. He came in and did it, and I was like, who's this? And it was like, oh, it's Graham Norton.
Why would? Because I always think that's quite strange. So I always think in London, no one's really that bothered to see.
That was a celebrity in press screening now as well.
Oh, right, so there's probably lots of quite famous people in the audience anyway, so it wasn't going to be like he was going to get mobbed.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Graham Norton ever having a situation which is like the beginning of A Hard Day's Night or anything.
But he's like the celebrity, isn't he, Graham Norton?
Well, he's a celebrity's friend, isn't he?
He's a celebrity. He's a celebrity's friend is bleaker, I think. Oh, yeah, I'm friends with him. And then when you see them out and about, they blank you. It's like, is Ramesh going to come to your birthday? Yeah, he said he would. And then he doesn't show up. And all
you like me tweet about my birthday, though.
What was it? So, yeah, so we went to see Creed 2 this week. You went to see it with seven people and Lorraine Kelly. Mm. I went to see
She was a person in her own right, to be fair.
Yeah. And I went to see it in a packed cinema.
Sort of a friend of hers. I'm a friend of a celebrity, Lorraine Kelly. Sort of pals.
I'm a friend of a celebrity. I'm a friend of a friend of a celebrity. In a way, we're all friends of celebrities. I went to see it in a packed cinema in Leicester Square. Creed 2, Rocky 8. Rocky 4 Part 2. So it's three sequels in one, is what we decided yesterday.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I liked it. I thought it was a really... It feels like...
Oh, hang on. Let's review it in one word. Three, two, one.
Smashing.
Good.
I was thinking of smashing like a word, like a boxing. That's not really what they do in boxing. They don't smashing isn't a boxing term.
No, uppercut. A body blow.
Yeah, that sounds bad, doesn't it? I wouldn't like that.
I wouldn't
it's like
mind
a body
it.
Blow.
Depends what part of the body. But I thought it was good.
I liked it a lot. I thought it really pays off the sort of emotional element to it. I got really sucked into the story, and it really made me feel what it was trying to make me feel. And I think there's something quite simplistic about a lot of the sort of emotional stuff in it within the Rocky movies that really pays off. Mm. We're saying that yesterday about, like, Sylvester Stallone seems to have created that character who is, you know, a brain-damaged boxer in his 70s who's... Is he in his 70s now?
Yeah, you created that character in the 75 and it's only just now paying off, isn't it? A brain-damaged boxer in his 70s.
But, like, I think there is, the way he has that sort of... You know, the part that gives bits of wisdom from the perspective of someone who appears to be and gives these very simplistic things often really feel like,
well, now
oh, that's really nice.
And now he's a mentor.
Seems wise, yeah.
Yeah, now he's a mentor. It's sort of... So I would say that Rocky... You know, that Creed 2 is better than the worst Rocky films.
Oh, yeah,
But it's not as good as the best.
Yeah, in all eight.
What I think is spectacular about the Rocky films, it's only really just dawning on me now, is that there are two good Terminator films, and there's two universally loved Alien films, mm-hmm. and there's one okay Police Academy film out of seven. Do you know what I mean? So you look at, name franchise, Nat. Name a franchise.
Star Wars.
I mean, there's there's the original trilogy that everyone loves. Then there's sort of like the prequels that people that remember them at the time from being children like. And then there's but that's like choppy. Mm. And it's almost the same amount, same number. There's no franchises... that I can think of that are consistently as good as the Rocky films.
Yeah.
Because you gave, I think, Rocky 1, borderline masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Rocky 6 is...
Brilliant.
Just, I think Rocky 6, Rocky Balboa might be my favourite. I think it's got the best speech of all time.
I've been watching
from
that
any film.
Again, following Creed 2, it put me in a Rocky mood, and I watched 4, 5 and 6. And 6 is brilliant. 6 gets better every time I watch it.
I think 6 is such a... Well, what I love... I mean, I could talk about Rocky for a while, so we might get stuck on this. But like, what I think is amazing about the Rocky franchise is that basically they're autobiographical. And the first film was about the fact that no one would give Stallone a go. And he wrote this thing and he was using boxing as a metaphor. And it was about his life. And it wasn't about him wanting to be the greatest, but it was about him getting a shot at least give me a go.
Yeah.
And... And then when you get to, you know, Rocky III is all about the money going to his head. And then Rocky IV is about Stallone's commitment to ending communism, which is kind of like it's kind of like, I guess, Creed II is almost like Rocky IV, Rambo III, Part II. Rocky Balboa was basically, it's a film that was made, so nobody really likes Rocky V, but I think even Rocky V, which I think is universally regarded as the worst of the franchise, is still pushing the envelope and trying to do, every single Rocky film is the same plot. Hmm. And so they've made 8 films, and they've all got the same plot, which is a fighter goes to have a fight, either loses or draws, or there's something, you know, unfinished about it, and then they go and have another fight, and then they win.
I'm saying this to you, you get one halfway through, one at the end.
You get 2 fights per film, one halfway through, one at the end, and then there's some sort of what's the word I'm looking for?
Sort of unresolved.
No, that's not the word. there's some sort of like
boxing.
No, there's some sort of element to it that distinguishes, you know, it's not just always a straight win.
Oh yeah, there's some sort of I haven't got it either.
Like the chaos theory, like lottery. Yes, it's like there's some. No, don't just say yes. I'm throwing words at you for a bit of help. I'm on medication. I feel like Rocky. But there's always some sort of like. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be talking about Rocky for a long time, but not because I've got lots to say, just because I'm trying to remember words. So all of the films are the same, but then within each film, they kind of do something slightly different.
Yeah.
And with Rocky Balboa, I think it's a really beautiful film where it's all about kind of like aging. And it's also about Sylvester Stallone saying, do you know what? By that point, he was straight to video. Mm. I mean, he got really arrogant in the 80s. And then by the time he got to the early 90s, he sort of like was huge again. He was doing Planet Hollywood, I think Cliffhanger and Demolition Man came out within 6 months of each other.
Yeah.
Judge Dredd came out, which I actually really liked at the time. And then he did The Specialist, Assassins. And he was kind of like, it was almost like he had a big film out at the box off at the cinema like every 6 months.
Hmm.
And then he did sort of Avenging Angelo, which I think went straight to video. That was a comedy he did with Anthony Quinn and Madeleine Stowe.
No, it passed me by.
And then he did Driven, which was a Rennie Harlin Formula One soap opera, which was kind of like Rocky, but it was like a soap opera. It was like absolute. It was like trash TV. And everyone was really sort of like vamping it up. It had Burt Reynolds in it and Gina Gershon in it. And Till Schweiger. Till Schweiger, that's the guy from Inglourious Basterds that you can remember from the other week. Who's the guy that kills himself in Dead Poets Society?
Oh, what's his name?
I want to say Robert Patrick, but it's not that.
No, it isn't. It's...
Patrick Sean Leonard? Or Robert Sean Leonard. So he's in it. Driven is a really weird film. And Stallone wrote this Formula One film, and then Rennie Harlin directed it. And I think it's actually really enjoyable. But there's a song in it called that goes, "You're Out of Control." I quite like that song. And I was in a pub once, and... with my mate, and they played it on the speakers, and we were listening to "You're Out of Control," and we're just like, I turned around and I said, "Oh, I really like this song," and he said, "Yeah, me too." And I said, "Where's it from?" And we were trying to remember where we'd heard it, and then I said, "Is it Driven?" And he goes, "I've not seen that." And then we realised it was from the same porn compilation video that we'd watched online.
you could have just said, "Well, I saw it in Driven," and then he would have just had to.
Yeah,
I saw it in Driven, mate. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, could have done that. Simpler times. So then he did that, and so then he went. What's the
daylight?
He did daylight. That was still a big one. Mm. That was probably before Avenging Angel. That was 1996,
right?
And that was Rob Cohen,
yes,
who's not a good director, but he did the original Fast and the Furious, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was during the disaster movie things. It's not a bad film. I mean, I can watch Stallone all the time, but
I think then you got into things like You Get Carters, didn't you? Around.
Yeah, and then Spy Kids 3D, which was the worst of all the Spy Kids, and of the original Trill. Get Carter, and then he kind of like, I can't remember. He did like a bunch that just started going. Detox, fucking awful. Detox was terrible.
It was very like, and it was sort of really obvious this was happening as well. Do you know what I mean? I think he became almost like. It was that kind of thing you could imagine seeing in Empire magazine about. You could see the decline.
Well, because he did Copland, wasn't it?
Copland. That was his sort of,
And what I think happened was that he was big box office new. Well, like, he did the 80s where he was in direct competition with Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. Then I think that they became friends. And then they weren't in competition with each other anymore. And they were in business with each other. And so that competitive drive ended. Cliffhanger has got the opening 10 minutes of Cliffhanger is maybe the best, one of the best 10 minutes in cinema that's been made. I think, and then it's a diehard knockoff. But I think the opening, and I really love Demolition Man, although I just wished that they'd really gone for it in terms of satire. It kind of like, when you watch it now...
Yeah, it feels like they want, yeah.
It's sort of sat on the fence between whether it's a comedy or whether it's a genuine action film. And I don't mind. I love it. I love both versions of it, but I think they should have picked one. Hmm. Because it's basically got the same plot as Austin Powers.
It does.
And... Austin Powers has the same plot as that. So I really think that there's loads of stuff about he was really big. And then he was like, right, I'm going to take all of that and I'm going to do Copland and I'm going to put on a load of weight and I'm going to act opposite Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel and Ray Liotta. And, you know, it was like a huge cast. Mm-hmm. And he like held his own. He was one of the best things in it as well. And no one went to see it. Mm. And he didn't get an Oscar for it. And it was like, oh. And then I think he was probably desperate to get back into making films. So then he's just picked a load of shit action films just to keep working.
Yeah.
And then that made him go straight to video. Anyway, so basically what's great about Rocky Balboa is that he said, I'm going to make another Rocky film. And everybody laughed at him. And they said, what, you're going to make it? You're 60, mate. You're going to make another Rocky film? How pathetic is that? I mean, you're already doing straight to video. And he went, no, I've got an idea for it. I'm going to do it like that. And basically, you watch Rocky Balboa, and it's the story of Stallone trying to make Rocky Balboa.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like a really meta movie where everyone laughs at him because he wants another shot at the title. And he made this film, and it was really beautiful. And it's a good ending to the franchise. And then when they started up again with Creed, I felt like Creed 1 lacked a lot of the heart that Rocky had. Although it felt like a very modern...
And it felt like, I thought at the end of Rocky Balboa that you couldn't really do anything else with it. And I think they do. I think that Creed is like a good example of something where they have pulled something out, where they've just gone, oh yeah, of course you could do this. You can have him as mentor.
I think when you look at what they've done with Star Wars, which is fuck it up, where they've kind of like taken the original characters and treated them really badly. They had one shot at putting Leia, Han and Luke on screen together and they fucked that up. You know, when they were still alive, they killed off Han and didn't have... do you know what I mean? When they were all alive and then Carrie Fisher died and it's just like, well, you fucked it. Because the two people that... Because there's two of the three are alive, but one of them's dead on film, and one of them... they're both dead on film, but they're the alive ones, and the only one that's still alive is the person that's dead in real life. You go, you fucked it. But what they did with Creed was that it was kind of like... It was really kind of complimentary and respectful of the Rocky franchise, and then they were still sort of like committed to doing
it. It's like a sort of remake, isn't it? It is like a second generation.
It is, but like only in the same way that every Rocky film is a remake of the previous Rocky film. They're all remakes, but they've just a different flavour to them. And I think Creed is... I think the disappointment with Creed is that... I think Rocky is a legitimately interesting character where he's got like a... Like, even on a very basic level, he's got a ball that he bounces and he wears a hat and he's really sweet. He's got a heart of gold. He used to be a debt collector. He's in love with the little girl with glasses that works in the pet shop and, you know, he has this awkward romantic... You know, the first Rocky works as a romantic drama with a couple of fights in it. And I think that's what's really surprising about it. And I don't know. I just... I think that with Creed, I think that he's hit the supporting cast around Adonis Creed is really interesting, but I think that they don't really do much with Michael B. Jordan's character in terms of giving him eccentricities. Mm. So really you feel like you're watching... And I think Michael B. Jordan is incredible, but I think that as Creed, they don't really give him enough eccentricities to legitimise it as a character. Mm. So it feels a little bit like you're just watching Michael B. Jordan in a film.
Yeah. I don't think it'd work nearly as well without this. He does need the supporting cast of... He needs Stallone and he needs Tessa Thompson's character and he needs...
Well, Rocky had that supporting cast. He had Apollo Creed, he had Paulie, he had Adrian, he had... later on, he had Mr. T, he had Hulk Hogan.
Paulie's robot girlfriend.
Paulie's robot prostitute girlfriend. And Dolph Lundgren, James Brown. You know, there was a huge supporting cast of eccentric characters. And in the Creed films, it feels like you've got the very sort of straight character.
Yes.
Who's got some eccentric characters around him. But they're the things that make it memorable.
Yes, yeah.
So with Creed 2, so we went to the press junket yesterday, didn't we?
Yes.
And we got to meet the director.
Who was Stephen Caple Jr.
Stephen Caple Jr., who was fucking lovely.
Absolutely lovely. Absolutely
what
lovely.
I found interesting about talking to him was that he was talking about, like, we said, where did you start? You're basically making a sequel to Creed. Mm-hmm. Making Creed 2. You're making Rocky 8 and you're making Rocky 4 Part 2. Where'd you start? And he basically said, well, you start with Rocky. Mm. And I thought that was really interesting because he didn't say, you start with Creed, you're doing a sequel to Creed.
Yeah.
He went all the way back to the original Rocky. And when you look at it, it did... basically Stallone didn't write Creed and Stallone came back and he wrote Creed 2. And I felt like there were less Rockyisms in Creed. And in this one, every time he opened his mouth, it was like a little word of wisdom. And I think what I like about Rocky Balboa is you get a couple of speeches, but they're sparing. Mm. I thought in Creed 2, there were a lot of them. Mm. And that's all I'm saying. But like every time he opened his mouth.
I think something that's very true in Rocky Balboa, which he hasn't really carried on into the Creed movies, is the way that Rocky is... still, as he would be in Philadelphia, a massive star. So in it, he can't go anywhere without people going, in every scene, there's someone going, hey, Rock! And he has to keep going, oh, yeah, and waving at people. And he goes, that's what it would be like if you were Rocky. You wouldn't be forgotten. You would absolutely be walking down the streets every day and people would be shouting hi and trying to get selfies with you because you would still be Rocky Balboa, even though you haven't had a big fight. Even in that universe, he's had a fight in the last 10 years or whatever. But, you know, he's still like a big name in Philadelphia. He would be someone who everyone would know and be like...
Yeah.
And that seems to be something they've kind of toned down in the Creed movies.
Yeah.
He's but much I think more anonymous
that, in there. I think that they've dealt with that in previous films. They've dealt with that in Rocky 3. Mm. They've dealt with that in Rocky 5. And it's kind of like, they've got other things to say. And I think it's sort of like, it is an evolving franchise. And I don't mind that. That sort of stuff doesn't stick out so much. For me, but there were parts of Creed 2 that I absolutely loved, and there were parts that made me roll my eyes a bit. But I guess I feel like Stallone probably wanted a lot more control over the franchise after it, because he's equal billing to Michael B. Jordan in this, basically. Like, I mean, he's in it as much. He's not so much a support part as you know. Equal screen time, but by far and away, I thought the standout performance for me was Dolph Lundgren.
Great, yeah, he's really good.
Like,
really good.
I love Dolph Lundgren. I mean, I'm not sure how great an actor he is, but well, I am sure, but I love him too much to say. But I think he's my favourite Expendable, and I really love him. But I just genuinely thought it was a great performance.
Yeah, and they sort of really add a lot to that character. Well, they add a character to that character.
Yeah.
They sort of.
Well, he was a cartoon character in Rocky IV, which is what he had to be for that film, because it's a cartoon American.
Super villain.
It's an American superhero fantasy movie.
I was saying yesterday that in Rocky IV, it starts off with him like punching a punch bag and then having the number come up of how many tons he's punched, and it's like, yeah, he's punched a million tons. And it's like he is just like, whatever it is, it's ridiculous.
He's punched
the sort of level he can punch at.
He's punched harder than any man has ever punched before.
He is like a superhero, isn't he? He's not a supervillain. He's not at all a real man.
Rocky IV isn't a real film. Rocky
IV
is an 80-minute film, and it's got 40 minutes of montages. It's got five montages in it, and then there's no real plot. It's just Apollo Creed gets killed at the beginning. James Brown sings a song, and then Rocky goes for revenge, and he defeats he finishes the Cold War. And it's not meant to be Mikhail Gorbachev, but they've got the guy that plays Mikhail Gorbachev out of Naked Gun to play like this Russian dignitary who starts basically Mikhail Gorbachev sees his Russian contender get defeated in the ring. And Rocky does this speech. He goes, "I can change, and you can change. Everybody can change." And then Mikhail Gorbachev starts the slow hand clap right from the back of the room, going, and then everyone goes, "Rah!" And it's a piece of shit, that film, but it's incredible at the same time. It's what you imagine a Rocky film would be.
Well, I had it. I watched it after watching Creed 2, because I thought, oh, yeah, I should watch Rocky 4 now. And I watched it, and while I was watching it, I was going, this is silly. And then it finished, and I went, stick Rocky 5 on. Just like that, if it has that on
it. It is silly.
So you still go, like, you still want to watch the next
one. It's silly, but it's also amazing. Do you know what I mean? It's liquid cinema. Anyway, we met Dolph Lundgren yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah.
And
it was exciting. It was exciting to meet him. I think he looks brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't mean this to sound in any way. He looks older and more liney in real life, but it really looks cool. He looks really kind of grizzled and cool. And I think he comes across like a good guy. And you mentioned this will be coming up on FUBAR's website, I think, isn't that soon? So you'll be able to watch this. And you were able to ask him about a little less conversation video.
I did.
And he seemed to appeal.
He perked right up.
He did.
Basically,
we just
interviewed Stephen Caple Jr. and he was lovely. And then we came into this fuckfest that was Florian. Florian Muntianu and Dolph Lundgren, who play father and son in the film. And we just walked into their junket room, and basically Dolph didn't want to be doing any more interviews. They didn't know there was two of us coming in to do interview them.
There was only one chair out.
It was just this absolute thing. And Dolph was in a bad mood, and he turned around to the press people, and he just said, we've got to really sort this out. And he put his finger up at us, and he was just like, hold on a couple of seconds, we're just sorting something out. And then he gave him a real going over about the fact that they needed a break. And then he turned around real grumpy, and he goes, "Nice to meet you."
And then someone just went, "Yeah, go. Just go."
And then we were just like, right. And so we tentatively started asking these questions, and I was fucking nervous because that was He-Man, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then we asked these questions, and then I mentioned Little Less Conversation, and there's a video on YouTube, which is my favourite YouTube video, of him singing Little Less Conversation. We've mentioned it before on the show, and I mentioned it to him, and his face lit up, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I've done that. Yeah, that was me. That was." It was like, it was nice. It was like, not saying I made his day, but I mean,
but I guess no one else mentioned it.
Maybe no one else mentioned it at the junket.
It seems unlikely, but maybe no one mentioned it.
We really need to play a song. Anyway, so I really liked Creed 2.
Me too. I'd recommend it.
I would say out of 8 films, none of them go below 3.
Yeah,
like 3 stars, and. This is probably a 3.5, 4. I'd just give it 4 stars. Mm. Not that we give 4 star ratings, but I mean, there's 8 of the films,
and I think we wouldn't ask you to give us star ratings.
To make eight, I mean, who goes out their way to give us a fucking 3 star, right? It's a 5, but it read like a 3. It was there's 8 films that have been made over 43 years or however many years with the actual. Original artistic talent behind the scenes. You know what I mean? That's unheard of. That's unheard of with any franchise.
Yes.
And the fact that there's 8 films, you know, either you like Rocky or you don't. But you can pretty much whack on any Rocky film, and get what you want out of it. And I think that's pretty much unheard of, in terms of. Modern movie franchises. Anyway, I'm going to play a song for you now, and then we'll do some more talking.
On FUBAR Radio.
It's tonsillitis, but oh my God, there's blood in it. So basically, I'm dying. So if you're listening, this might be my final broadcast. What else? I just want to say really briefly, I think you've got about 2 more nights to see Lucy Pearman this week at the Soho Theatre. I think that she's absolutely incredible. She's really she's my sense of humour. She's really fucking weird, and I love her. and she's on at Soho Theatre this week at 9:45. So maybe it's, I think I don't know all the details, but it's tonight and tomorrow. I think.
You said people say they say you can find out. Google Soho.
You can
theater.
Find out if you want to go and see some really good comedy this weekend. Go and see Lucy Pearman. Pearman.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Let's call the whole thing off. I had we've seen loads of stuff, and last night I saw. What I really wanted to say was that I saw the Tina Turner musical. Took my mum to see the Tina Turner musical on Tuesday, just as my tonsillitis was kicking in, and so I had a really kind of difficult time. But the Tina Turner musical, maybe we'll talk about it a bit with our guest later.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then last night, just wanted to say that I watched three films: Julia and Julia.
Oh, is that
about Julia Child?
Yes, yeah.
That is a flawed but excellent film. And
okay.
Meryl Streep is so incredible in that film. Brilliant. Catch Me If You Can.
Oh yeah, it's great.
A flawed but good film.
It feels like it's almost brilliant, I think.
Yeah. And then the other thing I saw was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, that's the Coen Brothers.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't seen it.
Well, you watch it and then we'll talk about that.
Okay. I watched a great film this week. In fact, maybe it's not the time, is it? I saw a great spaghetti western called The Return of Ringo, which is absolutely terrific.
Why don't you tell us about that after our guests?
Yes.
Because then we're going to play the song from it, aren't we? Okay, so I've just got to... Ready? Hello. We're now going live over the phone to talk to comedian and actor Steve Frost.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Bad.
How are you?
Well, I'm all right. I haven't got tonsillitis, so I shouldn't be talking to you.
Oh, can you?
I'm a singer now. I'm a singer in a musical. That's bad form.
You can't catch it over the airwaves.
Well, that's what the government wants you to believe.
You can catch it if you kiss Nick, though, apparently. I think you might be able to if you...
Well, also, whoever's using this microphone afterwards, actually, whoever's doing the next
put something over it.
So you're in a show at the moment, aren't you, called Fanatical?
Fanatical, yeah. So you were talking about the Tina Turner musical there. I've never done a musical before, so I decided to throw myself in, and it's great fun.
Can you sing?
Can I sing? No, but... But I've got a very, very patient MD, musical director. No, well, the song, I've only got one major song in it, and it's one of those Rhett Clarican speak sing things.
Oh, yeah.
I could talk to the animals.
Yeah.
I could only talk to the animals. They'd probably tell me I couldn't sing. No, I do sing a little bit, so it's not so bad, but I do speak sing in this show, yeah.
And it's like a spoof sci-fi musical, is that right? Or
it's a sci-fi convention musical, i.e. there's a those sci-fi conventions that have Star Trek and Red Dwarf and that. But this is a made-up one. I play Scott Furnish, who's a British bloke who went to L.A. and wrote comic strips, and then it became a TV, cult TV sci-fi program. And they're throwing their first convention back in the U.K., and they fly me back from L.A. to do the keynote speech. And they're all fans, yeah, and all dressed up in the costumes and, you know, all excited. Trouble is, I've been drinking all the way over on the aeroplane. and I've got some bad news from them about the TV show when I make my keynote speech in the form of a speak song. And then it all goes from there. But it ends up happy in the end. That's all musicals should.
Yeah, good. Well, that is a spoiler, isn't it?
I'm sorry I've been obscure there. It's just I can't give away what happens.
No, you can't give away the ending, can you?
No. Well, the curtain comes down. The curtain doesn't come down.
You'll do about the end.
The Playground Theatre. There's no curtain.
Whereabouts is the Playground Theatre?
Well, the Playground Theatre is up near White City, near the old BBC. It's in between White City Tube and Latimer Road Tube. So it's up that way, sort of Labour Grove way.
Cool, yeah.
It's a new theatre. It's only been open for over a year.
And who else have you got in the cast with you?
Well, we've got Sue-Ann Brown. Sue-Ann Brown she's a musical. She's been in Mamma Mia and all that paper, so she can sing. My goodness, can she sing? She's got about 10 songs in this show, and she even sings in the dressing room. They all do that. They all sing in the dressing room. Not used to that. She was in Stargate. You know the sci-fi program Stargate?
Mm-hmm.
So she was in that, and we get fans from Stargate coming to see a show about a sci-fi program which doesn't exist. That's So we're like, it's like a parallel universe. Oh, I'm using all the right words here, aren't I?
Yeah. It's like art imitating life, imitating
yeah,
art.
It's like, yeah, art imitating a spaceship.
Well,
yeah.
She also would have done a lot of those conventions herself, will she?
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. And there's eight of us in the, and there's her in it. And then Tim Rogers, who's been in Les Mis and all those West Side Story. It's really quite humbling. I'm in the dressing room with people who do warm-ups, vocal and physical warm-ups. I'm usually have a couple of pints, walk on and tell a couple of jokes and walk off again, you know.
Yeah.
These people get there an hour before and they do physical and vocal warm-ups and they go on stage and give it 100% all the time. It's quite frightening.
Yeah, it must be an absolute fucking nightmare, yeah?
Like I said, I'm a pint in the bar beforehand and two pints afterwards and maybe take one on stage with me. So it's all a bit of... But luckily, my character turns up drunk and he has a hip flask, so there are ways around that sort of thing.
And
we've also got Sophie Powles, who's a great young actress, and she was in Emmerdale for a lot, but she got didn't get kicked off Emmerdale. They killed her off as a heroin addict, and she's now in this show. So it's all very jolly. It's all very jolly.
And has it put you in the mind? Are you now a musical person? Are you a man of the theatre?
I have changed my career. I started off in the early 80s as a young, thrusting, alternative, anarchic comedian. I am now a West End Wendy. I am queuing up for my next bleeding job where I can sit in the dressing room, do me warm-ups, sucking a fisherman's friend and going on stage and belting them out because I love it. I love it.
And have you changed? Are you now a man of the theatre?
But I do talk to the people. Obviously, when I come out, people are there. Everyone who's seen the show, and I know I've got to sell the show, but everyone who's seen it said they really enjoy it because it's an original musical. It's an original one. It's the first time it's ever been done. You know,
we're not sure.
The King and I, and or as I would say, the King and me. And so they're all original songs with original characters. So for the sake of going to the theatre and seeing something new, instead of going to see all that Pinter stuff, we've already seen all that Pinter stuff. You know, come and see a musical about a sci-fi con.
So it's been on since November the 8th.
Yeah, and we finish on December the 8th. So we've got half of this week. We've got two shows tomorrow. No, what is it? Friday tomorrow. Two shows Saturday.
Friday today.
On a Sunday. And then we've got all the next week till the 8th of December.
So what point did you get on board?
Day one of rehearsals is usually the best way to do it. Right. They don't just start rehearsing and think, oh, we need to get... Oh, they do, actually. What am I talking about? Could you get up here? No, they just phoned up and said, look, would you like to be in a musical? I said, no, I don't do musicals. They said, no, you only have to sing half a song and speak the rest of it, and you're only in the second half. I said, you talk me into it. I'm there.
You don't even have to get there till half an hour after it begins.
Well, you do. That's the problem, but, you know.
Well, you could be doing your warm-ups while they're on stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I try telling that to the stage manager.
Oh,
she runs a tight ship.
That says that your musical supervisor is Jim Henson.
Yes, that's right, yes. He's got a hand in everything. It's not that one. Just hang on a sec, you're going to love this. Someone at the door, Jan! My phone went dead last night, and I've only just plugged it in, so I can't move away. I can't use it as a mobile phone. It's like a landline, except it's plugged in. A very short landline. Anyway, that's the life of a musical actor, you see.
I know.
I'm walking around in a smoking jacket with a cravat on and sipping brandy and smoking cigars. So, you know, it's a great life.
Tricky. And you've got tickets, it says, from £12.50. That's a bargain, isn't it, for the musical?
It's a bargain, and that's £1 a song.
I think most stuff in the West End, you're paying 70, 80 quid.
It's £1 a song and the 50p for my song. It's half a song.
just talking.
Yeah.
Tremendous. Well, it seems like it's a nice kind of, I guess it's a good kind of pre-Christmassy thing to see as well, right? It sounds like that kind of...
Yeah, it is. It's a good feel. It's a good feel musical. But you come out whistling the tunes. And not like in the West End where you come out... sucking in your breath about the prices.
What's your favourite...
That's a good quote. Somebody should write that down.
What's your favourite science fiction film?
What's my science fiction film?
What's your favourite?
Well, there's one. It's called... there's two. There's one called Silent Running.
Which is
that Bruce Dern with the three little robots?
Huey and...
Yeah, that's... I really like that one. Mm-hmm. But there's the other one. Is it Dark Star with the giant...
Carpenter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is... I can't stop. That's the only DVD I've got, and it just when they go in and the aliens there bouncing up and down like a giant tomato, I can't stop. And they blow up planets, don't they? They're just brilliant.
You've got one DVD.
And it's that. Yeah. That.
You've got one DVD.
I haven't got a DVD player either.
So you've got one coaster.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't use coasters. I'm too busy. I'm always out there. I'm either watching live stuff or doing live stuff at the time. Sit home and watch TV. It's apart from that, of course.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm a busy man.
Yeah.
I guess we're less busy.
DVDs are for losers. Live. Keep it live.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like you said you watched three films yesterday. I've never watched three films in a row in my life. What's that all about?
I've got tonsillitis, Steve.
You could read complete works of Dickens and get a bit of...
Yeah, I could, yeah.
Not in 6 hours.
Could read
a
bit.
What are you doing with tonsillitis? You should have had them out in 1977 or something, shouldn't you?
Yeah, that's right. That's what we should all have had them out when we're children. Okay, thank you very much for joining us, Steve.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure talking to you.
And go and see
you. I hope you get better.
Thank you.
Do come and see the show, but not if you've got a disease like tonsillitis.
No, I won't spread it around, but good luck with it.
Spread the word, not the disease.
Yeah.
Somebody should be writing. This is all gold dust. Somebody should be writing it down.
Break a leg.
No. Okay, boys. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye. Oh, no, I've turned down the wrong one. There you go.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Slick as fuck. So it says here, actually, on the press release that it's on till December the 9th, but I guess...
Maybe Steve won't come to the last one.
I guess he's not doing the last one. They'll probably get someone else to do
it.
They do that a lot of the time. They do a run of shows. And
Last night, final night.
When they did Aladdin, Paul O'Grady, Pamela Anderson, Ruby Wax. Saw it when Pam was on. Of course. I was only half there for the story. the other half was... Oh God, I love Pamela Anderson. She does loads of work for animal charities. Et al's not one. So what were we talking about? I'm just trying to remember what we were talking about.
Return of Ringo.
You saw Return of Ringo. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, I just saw
Return of Ringo.
It's absolutely brilliant, and it's a sort of semi sequel to another film called A Pistol for Ringo.
Who's in it?
It's got a guy called... Oh, what's he called? In the film, he's called Montgomery Wood, but that's not his real name. It's like they've even given him a fake American name. He's an he's an Italian man who they've assigned him.
But what's his name?
Name's Ringo.
What's the actor called?
I've forgotten his name. His name's gone.
Well, come on, tell us about it. And
The first one's like a comedy, and the second one is like a sort of semi-sequel where it has all the same cast but all playing different characters, except for the main character is still called Ringo. But the first one's sort of like a comedy, whereas the second one is much darker, and it's about a man returning from the Civil War, and he's called Giuliano Gemma, and he plays Montgomery Wood. And in the second film, the character is called Ringo, but he's also called Montgomery Brown, as if he's been given the character name of the actor in the first one. And he plays this guy who's returned from the Civil War, and it's sort of a very dark spaghetti western and he returns to the town that's been taken over by bandits, and his wife, who he thinks is... his wife believes him dead, but he's come back essentially from the dead to kind of reclaim his town and his family. And it's absolutely brilliant.
They did that a lot with spaghetti westerns, though, where they did... Like, the Dollars trilogy isn't really a trilogy.
No, it's not.
They just
really
had the costume, and then they put... Like, he's called something different in each film.
Yeah, Blondie or Blue.
And it's got a lot of the bad guy... Like, Lee Van Cleef plays two different characters in two different films, and the bad guy from the first one is the bad guy in the second one.
And you can sort of assume that Clint Eastwood is probably three different characters in all three films anyway, right? There's that.
Yeah,
kind of...
he's Blondie, Joe, and he's something else.
Is he Blue Eyes or...?
No, I can't remember what he's called in the other one, but he's got three different names, and so he isn't the man with no name. He's just the man with an inconsistent name, and that's basically what Robert Rodriguez was doing when he put Danny Trejo in all the films, Cheech Marin is in all of the Desperado films, and
slightly different characters.
Well, he's not in all of them. They're not in the first one, but they all play different characters and stuff.
It's got a brilliant theme tune, which is by Ennio Morricone, but it has a singer who I've not been able to identify. But it's tremendous. Absolutely brilliant theme.
Oh, I thought you were going to be. I thought you were going to say that Franco Nero played Ringo, because Franco Nero was the original actor that played Django.
Yeah, no.
But obviously, as a UK teenager, my first introduction to Franco Nero was the bad guy in Die Hard 2.
Who's
the guy on the plane?
Yes, yeah.
And he was like this. Who's this guy? Who's this guy? He's this European bad guy, but he's no one that I've ever heard of. And then years later, you realise that he's a fucking huge deal. Anyway, we're going to play the theme tune to The Return of Ringo.
That's right.
That's what your pick was. It's a slightly different show this week because I'm on medication.
I kiss at last the beloved crown of my land that I left one day with my heart full of pain. I have looked in the faces of my old friends, but now do you look at me as my old friend? And now what happens, you must tell me. Must remember who I am. If you see a man with darkest eyes and ragged clothes walking through your village, don't shout him, but go at his side. I'm that man, and now I beg you, help me. My sweetheart, I was dead. To take my place, you shall pay for the space lie. Those who saw me as a round-time man, those who tried to destroy our world, shall leave forever our
We're back. I thought we'd split the difference, and because it's largely instrumental, and it's a really good piece of instrumentalism. But
you just don't know when it's going.
But Nathaniel keeps apologising for the fact that it's 7.5 minutes long, and I'm just
good,
like, you don't need to apologise for that. But we do have a really good guest, and it's like 8 minutes past one. So I thought what we'd do is we'd play your song out, and we'd get our guest in, and then we'd have the best of both worlds. So we're joined in the studio now by Sian Harris.
Hello.
And my name's Nick, and this. Oh, we normally press. Oh no, this is getting confusing now. Okay, it doesn't matter.
It's very slick.
I like that you've got this.
Hang on a minute now.
Just let that sink in.
Do you know how many fucking guests we've had have started off? Hang on, I'm gonna. Hang on. That's never happened before.
What hasn't?
No one's ever come in and told us we were slick.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm just going to press the i10.
Okay.
But that honestly means a lot to me
it's
that
really
you think
slick.
That we're slick.
Yep.
We'll show you how
to Spoiler!
Sorry.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
And we're back.
Slick.
That's
slick.
Great.
I'm so impressed.
It's 9 minutes past one and we're joined in the studio by Sian Harris. How are you, Sian?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you, Nick?
I've got tonsillitis. I must say that every time that there's like
a lot. Catch him mid swallow. Does he look like he is just giving birth?
It takes me 3 seconds to swallow. So
it's so painful. I had it in Edinburgh, and I couldn't eat or swallow or anything. I had to take myself to hospital at like 4 a.m. Oh. And my taxi driver was amazing. He took me to get ice cream. He's so sweet. I couldn't talk. I was just miming ice cream.
That's what. How do you mime ice cream?
I don't, just this is a spoon.
No, don't talk. Don't talk. Mime it.
But don't talk, Sian.
Don't talk on it. Let's mime ice cream on the radio.
Let's do mimes on the radio.
Don't talk over the mime. Matt.
Don't, this Nathaniel.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
I think that could easily be soup though, as well. I don't know what
yeah,
about that says
soup
ice
and
cream.
Or it could be a film.
Don't
yeah,
you go
and
you pointing at your neck going.
Yeah, I was pointing at my neck, which was covered in an enormous scarf, and I just couldn't talk.
Covered in an enormous picture of an ice cream.
A wall's lid.
So hang on. So I had, I don't eat McDonald's, but the last 2 days have been hot.
Right.
Hot at home. Oh. And the NHS said if you're ill, then don't wrap up warm and don't mop yourself down with a damp towel.
Right.
So basically you've just got to sit clammy.
Why?
In a
Why
t-shirt.
Are they telling you Why? That? Where are you getting
if you, well, if you mop yourself down with a damp towel, but just listeners at home, get your own medical advice, right? But this is what I was told yesterday. I'm not a doctor,
right?
I just want to just okay.
want spoiler.
Just want you all to know that I'm not a doctor, right? if you cool yourself down with a towel or something like that, a damp towel, then what can happen is that you end up cooling yourself down too much, and then shivering even more, and then making it worse. And then if you do the opposite, if you warm yourself up, you end up sweating loads and then shivering again. And
right.
So you're just going to need to basically ride it out.
Really?
This is terrible, I think. Anyway, so I got Deliveroo to deliver me...
A McDonald's
milkshake.
Because that's what you need, isn't it?
Which was absolutely the milkshake was the fucking nicest thing.
Because it's like ice cream.
Well, water, when you drink water, because you're so thirsty because you've been sweating so much. You've been sweating so much. Now, a lot of our listeners enjoy that sort of stuff. Hi, Mum. So when you're guzzling down the water,
yeah.
Right? It's like imagine a stream, and it's going over the rocks,
yeah.
And it's kind of like there's quite a
yeah.
force to the water, and that is it's going, it's trickling, it's rushing past
gushing.
Your it's gushing past your. Pus inflamed tonsils, right?
Gushing down your throat.
Yeah.
Gushing down your throat, but your tonsils are inflamed.
Oh, it's horrible.
And so it actually really hurts them.
Funny. The face you pull when you have to swallow. Don't swallow, just spit into a bucket.
It's not there, it's at the back of my throat. So the McDonald's milkshake is nice because it coats your tonsils with delicious, creamy fucking hell. I'm ill. You're sick in the head. And
this sounds like the kind of talk that ought to have the Driven soundtrack over the top of it.
Well, we haven't got that, but so
maybe do that and give some cures for tonsillitis over the
cures for, no, I don't have any cures for tonsillitis. Anyway, how are you?
Yeah, really well, thank
health?
You.
How's your health?
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
And is tonsillitis, is it thing that...
It's passed.
It'll never come back.
I don't know what the deal is.
Will it come back again?
I'm not sure. What's the deal with tonsillitis?
I don't know. You don't have them out now, do you?
Didn't you?
No.
Is that not a thing?
Did you have yours out?
I've got mine out. Are you talking about what? Sorry.
Wipe them down.
Just
Nick.
Popping them back.
That's not your tonsils. That's not that. That's not what it is.
Way too low.
Oh my God.
No, it's my bunions.
So. Do you not get them out anymore, Nick? I mean, your tonsils, do they not take them?
Apparently not.
No. Why not?
Because I guess it's an operation.
They have to be repeat offenders.
Right.
They have to keep coming back so they go, actually, do you know what? This is costing the NHS too many man hours. So we might as well just pop them out and be done with it. But normally it's a process. Well, there's two sorts. There's a bacterial tonsillitis that will last for months, even with appropriate antibacterial therapy. But sometimes bacterial tonsillitis will last for that. But then the other sort of tonsillitis, and I will tell you about the other sort of tonsillitis. Yeah. It's not just bacterial. I'll tell you about the other.
What's the other
sort
one,
of? I'll tell you about the other sort of tonsillitis. That's not bacterial tonsillitis.
There's two types, isn't there?
Yeah. There's bacterial tonsillitis, and then the other sort of the other sort of tonsillitis. It hasn't affected my talking. I'll tell you that for nothing.
Good point.
But is it taking you this long to look it up? The other sort of tonsillitis is if you have seven times in 1 year, in a year for 2 years in a row, the doctor will remove it. This isn't the response to what I was setting up.
Seven
What's the other
year?
Sort
that
of tonsillitis?
Awful, though,
it
wouldn't it?
Be.
If you add it 10 times over 2 years, they go, we'll take it out then. That's too many.
That is too many.
That's too many.
Do you know what? I'd get them out and I'd just leave them out. I'd just walk around with them out.
I feel like at school, kids would have them in a little jar or something.
Yeah.
They did often.
Yeah.
I was badly bullied.
Okay. Isn't it only one tonsil?
Yeah, you've got that thing that hangs down at the back.
Is that a tonsil?
That's not a tonsil.
Isn't it?
What's the
tonsils
tonsil
are either
on
side.
The side.
How
that's
are they?
The epiglottis.
That? Good grief. Is it? Right,
yeah.
So that stays.
The thing that bounces staying. Around in the middle, oh gosh, no, don't get rid of that.
Okay, so you don't
if you're ever at home with tonsillitis and
don't
want to do it yourself, don't do a DIY tonsillectomy, tonsillectomy. So don't do it yourself. Don't do a DIY one.
Where are your tonsils?
You
can see your tonsils.
On the side.
You can see your tonsils at the side, yeah. They're like, an orangutan. You know when the orangutans, you get the king orangutans with the big side bits, Those are the bits that are in the back of your throat. They're the big side bits that you get on an orangutan.
You only see them when
they're
covered in pus.
You've fucking seen them. Look, there's a picture. Those are your... there's your...
You only look at them when they're sore.
Uvula.
Otherwise, why would you ever look?
That's true.
These are your tonsils, either side here. And that is your adenoid at the back. And then that is your tongue. We've got a picture.
And
for those listening at home, we've got a picture.
Uvula.
So what's your adenoid? That's up your nose, isn't it?
No, it's at the
what's
back
your epiglottis?
Yeah. It's right at the back.
What's your epiglottis? What's your epiglottis? What's your epiglottis? Stop chatting. What's your epiglottis? In the middle of a very complicated biological chat. You're making us look like...
We're performing surgery here.
Betty Burke.
Can you imagine? Just stalling to find out what's this bit?
That'd be a good surgical thing. The epiglottis.
Just
that's what my doctor does now, though.
What?
He Googles it. He just Googles the symptoms and goes, that's probably that.
That's what they all do.
Yeah.
What doctor are you going to?
I don't know. Maybe he's not a doctor.
Is it in the back of a van, Nathaniel?
Yeah,
is it,
yeah.
Is it Dr. Jeeves? he's got a new job.
Yes.
Just to clear this up, the epiglottis is a flap in the throat that keeps food from entering the windpipe and the lungs. The flap is made of elastic cartilage covered with a mucous membrane attached to the entrance of the larynx. It projects obliquely upwards behind the tongue and the hyoid bone, pointing dorsally. So that's cleared that up.
That's brilliant.
That hasn't cleared up your tonsillitis, obviously.
No. No, mate, you shouldn't be in work.
I shouldn't be here.
No.
And it is work.
And it is hard work.
Well, I've been to the doctor this morning and he said that I've got tonsillitis and he's given me all the medication.
Meditation tapes.
And,
meditation, yeah.
That's how I'm going to combat it this time.
Yeah.
And
just relax.
I'm going to concentrate so hard that those tonsils will disappear. And along with
like
all
Luke Skywalker.
All of my woes. My tonsils are depressed Jedis. And they're going to concentrate so hard that they'll disappear. And after this, I'm not going to do anything until Monday.
Oh, well, that's nice.
No, it's not.
That's a weekend.
I'm going to be sweating in bed.
Oh.
I'm going to be sweating in bed. No,
oh my
but
God.
I'm so ill that I was sweating so much the last few nights that the sweat. If I stay awake and concentrate, I don't sweat.
Right.
So what will happen is that I'll be awake and I'll have like my feet out, but I'll have like the corner of the duvet over my chest. And I'll just be able to concentrate long enough on me not sweating. But then when I eventually do fall asleep, I'll wake up 30 minutes later, like drenched in sweat, like I'd just poured 5 pints of water all over the bed. Like I'm in a Lilo that's sort of like slowly deflating. And I'll be just like, and you can hear it splashing around,
oh,
and the duvet
mate.
Is soaked all the way through. And it's just like, oh my God, I didn't think I'd had that much liquid in my body. Mm. And
has it become like a water bed?
It's like, it's like what I've done is I've got out of bed and I've pissed all over the bed and then I've got back into bed. That's what it's like. It's like that. But that couldn't have happened. Couldn't have happened. Anyway, we're joined in the studio now by Sian Harry.
Hello.
You're a professional broadcaster.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this.
So you're a writer.
Yes.
You're a performer.
Yes.
You're an actor.
Yes.
Yes. You're a producer.
Yeah.
You pretty much do everything, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Do it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've
tricks.
You wrote and produced a short film that I was in.
Yes.
When did we do that?
I can't remember. About a year and a half, about 2 years.
I think I've got a moustache in it, right? I think I was filming.
Oh, yeah, you have got a moustache.
I think I was filming Loaded, and I took a day off from Loaded, and I went to Wales, and I did 10 minutes work,
yeah.
And then I came back again.
You're very good, though, Nick.
I'm in
it. Very good.
I'm in it. Yeah, I'm in it a bit.
Yeah.
But no more than that. It's so what I really liked about it, it's called Neck Face,
yeah.
And it's sort of like a comedy, anxiety, horror,
yes.
wedding romance thing.
Yes,
it's like a hybrid film.
Yeah.
It's a short film, and
sorry. Every time Nick is swallowing, your face is so wincy.
Yeah.
It takes
awful.
About 3 seconds to
it.
Swallow, but I try and always swallow on a laugh. Thanks, Sian.
Sorry. Yeah, it's about the anxiety of Bridefield, so that kind of manifests itself in a little monster growing out of her neck. On her wedding day.
It's great. It's like a body horror. It's David Cronenberg meets John Hughes.
but it's been winning awards. Certainly
it
been
nominated
for an award.
Yeah.
Well, it's doing
thanks
the short.
Thanks, mate.
It's doing the short film circuit, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I spent what I came up overnight. Spent a morning filming, and then I went back to London, and then that was like a year and a half ago, and then 2 weeks ago.
Do you sleep in the marital bed?
I slept in a really big bed.
It was a marital bed.
Was it a four-poster?
Yeah.
I slept in this four-poster honeymoon suite. And when I got in there, there's a little reception. So there's the door to your hotel room. And it was a really nice hotel. It's the door to your hotel room. And then when you get in there, there's almost like a reception sort of like foyer area.
Yeah.
Where you hang your coat and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you go through to like the main area. And in the reception area, there was like... there's like a charging rack for 20 walkie-talkies. And I went in there and I went, wow, that's so odd that they charge the walkie-talkies in this room in the hotel.
In the honeymoon suite.
In the honeymoon suite. I was thinking, why would you need that many walkie-talkies in the honeymoon suite? Never occurred to me it was part of the film crew. It was part of the film production.
Like I just thought, Marty McFly's honeymoon suite.
I thought it was just really weird. I went there and I filmed it, and then how long ago was it? 6 weeks? We went to the Welsh BAFTAs.
Oh yes, that was about 6 weeks ago.
So you invited me to the and it got Welsh BAFTA nominated,
yes.
Didn't it?
Yeah, so we're really chuffed about that.
That's amazing.
It is nice.
What I liked about it, I saw it for the first time at Machynlleth last year.
Yes, the Comedy Festival.
And that's the first time I saw it. So who's in it? Izzy Sooty's in it.
Izzy Sooty.
You're in it.
Yourself, myself. Ellis James does the voice. Roger Evan is the groom, and he's brilliant. We've got Di Butcher in it, and just loads of incredible people who I know from Wales who are brilliant. Just really, really funny.
Because I'm hardly in it. When I watched it, it was like watching someone else's thing, and I loved it.
Aww.
I thought it was genuinely just...
You're really, very good
this
in
is
it,
your, this is your first...
Yeah.
This is your first, because you produced it with your production company?
Yes, myself and Rod Gilbert's production company.
And so this is the first thing that you've made together.
Yeah.
And so you didn't know. See, every time I've made something, I've gone through, very gratefully, through the BBC.
Ah, that's good.
But I've never had, you've had to jump through a lot of hoops and kind of go, well, it'll be like this, and you could potentially make it into this. And there's got to be a purpose outside of just making the film.
Yeah.
On paper, but it turns out when you've made it, that's where it ends. but with you, I guess you had carte blanche, if I've used that phrase correctly.
It's a type of yogurt.
With that, I suppose you've
had... That's the name of the suite in the hotel you're in. The carte blanche suite, please.
You've had absolute Muller corner.
I love it when you... I do that all the time. I use phrases I'm not sure are right, but I just put them in and then nobody says anything. They tend to be French.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Say it with enough confidence.
Just throw it in. There was an element of creative freedom. Yes.
And does it mean doing film a short film? Do you have in your head can I parlay this into a feature?
Yes. And we thought about it, but then we thought, no, it's a really long. The idea is quite stale.
That's probably quite smart, isn't it? It's quite
that
smart
is very
thinking
smart.
That would be.
Yeah, you got to be quite savvy.
I think you could think. Some things do work as shorts and some things work as trousers, films and features. But but some things, I mean, you could expand this, and you could definitely expand it. But then I think what would happen is it would have a really good, you can easily see a very clear beginning and a very clear ending.
Yes.
And I think what you'll end up with, or what you could potentially end up with, I'm not writing it off. I would like to see a feature of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe give the hairdresser a little bit more to do.
Just give him a massive plot.
But that would be weird, wouldn't it? If it started off...
Starts off as a neck monster.
Started off with Izzy sort of getting a neck monster, and then there's a middle 45 minutes about a hairdresser.
A hairdresser who wants to make it big.
So when it goes back to Izzy Sooty, people go, I forgot about this. Yeah, I forgot this.
It'd be like Pulp Fiction.
Is this
the same film? Yeah. That Dallas episode where he wakes up. Oh yeah, Bob B. Do you know what I mean?
But unlike
he's
you,
alive.
What's weird is in that one, the bit with someone who has someone growing out their neck is the bit that's not the dream.
Yeah.
That's the real bit. But there's a middle section about a hairdresser.
About hairdressing. About a course, a GMVQ you do.
But you get that a lot with comedy, feature length comedies, yeah, where they've got a premise and they've got a beginning. They've got a really strong like first half hour, and sometimes. That's not necessarily true. But I'm thinking of something like Clockwork, where you go, oh, right, yeah. And then you've just got this endless, baggy middle section where it's just like, get on with it. And
well,
then
a lot of it just becomes episodic, doesn't it? So you have like essentially like sketches, don't you, within like the format
the theme
of a film.
Of time.
Yeah.
Or like Mr. Bean sketches where it's kind of like, yep, and they're all threaded together. But then a lot of the time, also when you get... comedies, if you look at something like Three Men and a Baby or Dumb and Dumber, what they'll do is they'll have a comedy and then they'll attach quite a serious mob plot line that is the engine of the film that keeps it going.
I love Dumb and Dumber.
Or with The Mask as well. Yes. Every time you jump back to the gangsters, it's kind of like, oh, this is boring.
Plot.
This plot, isn't it? And then you jump back to Jim Carrey, or when you jump back to Three Men and a Baby, you know, three dickheads that can't look after a baby. They'll probably gender swap that film now, won't they? Three women and a baby. Yeah. No incidences. quite an uneventful hour and a half.
I suppose that's a funny thing now. That film probably wouldn't get made, wouldn't it? Because in the 80s, the idea is like, imagine like three adults trying to look after...
One of them is Tom Selleck. Yeah. Steve Guttenberg. That's it. I love how Steve Guttenberg paints that wall, though. Have you seen Three Men and a Lady 2? No, yeah. Three Men and a Lady.
Three Men and a Little Lady.
Little Lady. Have you seen it?
I have seen it, but not for a
long
time.
He does like a
time.
Cartoon mural on her walls of her and just running around and messing
no,
around.
No, but he does it in the first one, then they update it in the second
does
one.
Does he update it?
I used to have a joke about that. They
Did
said
you?
They're making a sequel. They're making Three Men and a Prostitute. No, they're not making a sequel. They made a porno version of it called Three Men and Prostitutes. It's great because it stars a man that looks exactly like Tom Selleck, a man that looks exactly like Ted Danson, and Steve Guttenberg. I really like that. It's weird. I read a thing about Police Academy this week. But anyway,
what?
I said, you just say, Steve Guttenberg was
I had such a crush on him.
On the Guttenberg.
Oh my God. Yeah, he was my dream man.
Oh yeah.
Dream man.
He turned down, what did he turn down? He turned down Big to do Three Men and a Baby. Or is that what he did? I think he turned down Big to do Three Men and a Baby.
Poor Steve.
Who directed Three Men and a Baby?
Leonard Nimoy.
Nanu Nanu.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't know that. Do you remember the ghost?
I didn't know. I did. What ghost?
The ghost
with...
in Three Men and the Baby.
Oh yeah,
it still freaks me out.
There was an item on that on TVAM.
Was there?
Because you remember when films were shown on TV? It was like a
ITV.
National thing.
Yes.
Because there was four channels, so you're all bound to be doing one of them.
Yeah.
And if ITV were showing Three Men and a Baby, then BBC would show repeats or something. No point in competing. No point in showing anything. We're not going to show Batman. We'll save that. Save that for Christmas Day. And ITV would be like, well, they're showing Batman. Oh, well, we'll put an old Roger Moore Bond on. Because we can't compete. And there's not enough to choose from. Yeah. So
I
it was
love
like,
that.
It was a national thing, wasn't it?
When you don't even have films on telly now.
They don't bother. It's pointless.
It's like watching on film four or something.
A Revenge of the Sith on Saturday afternoon. Yeah. And you'll be like, no one's watching that.
I loved it. And you'd always get to a climax and then it would just cut to commercial break sponsored by Diet Coke and that kind of, you know, it was awful.
Yeah, and you'd make that. No, I'd love it. That's when you made your tea.
That's true. And then you'd tape it and then you'd remember the advert.
Die
Hard 3 will be back after the news at 10.
Oh yeah, you'd have to wait for the news.
I totally forgot about that.
Okay.
Have I got time to have a bath?
So I've just watched an hour of the film and in 45 minutes I can watch the end. Brilliant.
And it gets back to the action shot.
Or when Channel 5 started and there'd be like on Monday night, Speed. On Tuesday, Independence Day. On Wednesday, Speed. On Thursday, Speed. On Friday, Independence Day, followed by Speed.
It's like
Speed was on all the time. It was on all the time.
They report it and they're going to get their money's worth.
Yeah. You're absolutely going to watch Speed and Independence Day.
You'd tape it and then every sleepover I went to was like, can we see the ghost again? And it was really freaky, that bit where you rewind it and pause and there's like a cutout of Ted Danson.
Yeah.
It does look odd because it's also much bigger than you think it is.
They don't set it up.
And it's just, and no one... You can sort of, it is in the film, isn't it? But it's obviously like a deleted scene or something where there is a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson.
So the scene is that you're watching Three Men and a Baby, and in the background, there's a mysterious character that stood in the doorway that in the playground, I was led to believe from quite a legitimate source that it was the ghost of a dead child
that had died
in the building.
Really,
he died in that, he died falling out the window of that building.
What, the studio they filmed in?
Why do you always do that, Nat? Why do you always get to the punchline while I'm doing the setup?
It's just natural.
It's like you hate setup.
Oh, you just get.
So as I was saying,
go on.
We should give you access to the button. I mean, what's the fucking point? I need to swallow now.
Go on.
Spit. Oh, love. It's so painful.
So they were like saying that, it's the ghost of a kid that threw himself out of a building, and that you can see him on film. What's the point, Nat?
I'm enjoying it.
But then it turns out years later that obviously they filmed on a soundstage. So there was no ghost. It was actually just a cardboard cutout. And, of course, the big giveaway is that ghosts aren't real. Of course they're not going to fucking... ILM could have saved millions on when they were making Ghost by just simply killing Patrick Swayze. It's going to be the role of a death time, Patrick. So, I don't know. Three Men and a Baby. But they always put like this, they put an engine to it because they can't just make a comedy about three dickheads that can't look after a kid.
Right.
So what they'll do is they'll add like a drug plot line going in.
Like Public School.
And then at the end, the plot line will really kick in where Ted Danson uses his acting skills to dress up as a woman and capture...
I'm talking about Three Men and a Lady when she's supposed to go to public school and they stop it.
Yeah, but what I'd say about Three Men and a Little Lady is that is all comedy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's worse for it.
Is it?
It's not a good film. I don't think it's a good film. I remember being 8, seeing it at the cinema, punching myself in the dick because I hated it so much. It was Three Men. I didn't like the way us Brits were represented.
What, in the way that when they go to England, the way we say vitamins and stuff.
Yes.
In that film.
So they say vitamins in the film.
Yeah, they do.
English people.
They make
say
a joke about.
Oh, do they?
Yes, they do. That's and the country lanes. And our public school system.
Well, they were like in London, and they were in a country lane in London, blocked by sheep, going, oh my God, this country is full of shit. Ma'am, that's the Brits. And they were like, it's not like that. It's not like, it's like when you watch Friends, and you go, I really like Friends. They're like my friends. And then they come to London, and they're like, God, fucking hell. Oh, look at all these Londoners. They're all so... pathetic. And you're like, oh. They're all so posh, all these Londoners. Look at them. They're all la-di-da, la-di-da. And you go, oh, I thought we were friends. But in actual fact, it's just because it was a one-sided relationship and you didn't know I was tuning in.
Well, I think that's it. You're either sort of public, you're either Hugh Grant or a football hooligan, aren't you?
In
you're either Hugh Grant or Vinnie Jones.
Yeah. That's right. They're the two types of Englishmen.
Both charming.
Or Jason. Or Jason Statham or Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Or indeed.
Or Richard Griffiths. Or Ben Kingsley.
Or
Angela Lansbury. Or Cary Grant.
There's one where Angela Lansbury comes, Jessica Fletcher comes to London and she meets her twin cousin or something who's English.
Hang on. Twin cousin.
Oh, yeah.
It's or Julie like Andrews.
Basically, she's also played by Angela
Lansbury. Right, okay, yeah.
And in that, it's got things where you've got Ben next to, like, St. Paul's and all that. It's that kind of... And it's all like the London fog. It looks like Jack the Ripper or something. But it's right made in the 80s.
Is this some... is Jessica Fletcher not English?
I know. I think she does an accent for Jessica Fletcher. I think she's meant to be American. But she's from Cabot Cove, isn't she?
Yeah, she's... Yeah. Yes.
Lots of murders happening. It's like midsummer, isn't it? Midsummer in England. Big high murder rate.
Such a tiny place.
Or Rupert Everett.
Nice. All the different types.
Quite a lot of famous British people in America for them to pick from. You're not either Hugh Grant or a hooligan.
I think you are in terms of... I just watched you have this drink.
Have you ever been to America?
I have, and they said I sounded like Hugh Grant. And I thought, well, I don't. And I love
that. They said that I sounded like a generic football hooligan.
Exactly.
Thug. That's brilliant.
No, they, honestly, oh my God, you sound like Hugh Grant.
Did you get action out of that?
No. They
love a British accent.
They said that I sounded like the Beatles.
Did they?
All of them.
And I said... thanks very much. You know, I've been told that for a long time. Not so bad, really. Oh, no, not that one.
I always like how the Beatles don't even sound like they're from Liverpool.
No.
It's like a sort of bizarre accent. Yeah, it's that sort of... no one in Liverpool actually sounds like the Beatles, even though they've all gone to school with them.
Yeah. Yeah. They've grown up with them.
Oh, I know. I went to school with John Lennon. Did you? But everyone did. Tiny.
Why is your accent so mad?
Anyway, so you're not going to expand it to feature length?
No. No, I don't. No,
would you
I don't
like
think
to
so.
Do? Would you like to do a movie? Is that the next thing?
No, it's not the next thing. It's Nathaniel's just spat water over me.
Why?
I don't know. Don't know why. But it's not. It's
it was
not
just
the
when you
next
said
thing.
When you said it. He said, "No, it's not." The
no,
next
it's not the next thing. There's loads more stuff to get out the way.
What do you do first?
It would be nice to make a film. Would you like to make a film?
I'd love to make a film. Would I'd love to. But I'm sorry.
You would?
But you know what? I love to do it, but I make no effort whatsoever.
Oh, that's like Nick.
What are you talking about?
Turning up on our day, sleeping in the honeymoon suite, doing 10 minutes.
Oh, right, yeah, sure. Sure. Well, I made no effort on your film.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
You're still great in it. Very good.
I don't know how it's turned from me saying, "Oh, I really didn't do very much," and you going, no, Nick, I'm being modest. You've got to basically see through the modesty. I hate it when people take your modesty at face value.
As genuine self-deprecation.
It's like when you're meeting a group of burly men in a pub for the first time and you self-deprecate to make them like you.
Yeah.
And then they...
you're just pointing out your flaws for them.
Yes.
You're making
and then
it easy
they go, right, those are your flaws. And you go, no, that was an invitation for you to share your flaws.
Yeah, no, not going to happen.
And that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Still, I like a nickname. Makes you feel special. Sorry, I had to swallow.
It does.
You should play a sting every time you swallow.
Play a sting?
Well, yeah. Just go into a sting song.
Play Fields of Gold every time you swallow. Should we talk about some of the things you're a fan of, Sian?
Okay.
Well, you are a fan. I like you. Well, one of them I can see already.
What is it?
You've put favourite films, It's a Wonderful Life / Grease 2.
Yeah. Now, both equally heart-wrenching.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen Grease 2.
Oh, you'd love it.
Would I?
Yeah, you would.
Let's rock
Hello.
And roll.
Yeah, someone's watched it.
Let's do it for our country.
Excellent.
The red, white and the blue.
Oh, my God, you really
let's
like it.
Let's do it for our country. Let's do it me. I don't know.
Me and you.
That's not the
no,
word.
That's not the word. But it's great. I mean, that song is performed in a four-up shelter.
I want a cool rider. I want a cool rider.
It's
so good.
I mean, they're just as catchy as the songs
brilliant.
From Greece.
Yeah, if not
and
better.
By the songs from Greece, I mean the ones that you pick up when you go on holiday. Not the musical, Greece.
Wedding songs.
But in Greece 2, it's not Danny Zuko who's the main one, is it? It's Maxwell Caulfield, is it?
Yes.
And
he was
is he playing
Dynasty.
English?
He was in Dynasty. Yeah, he's
Maxwell
English.
Caulfield. He's another
Maxwell
one.
He's or the Maxwell Caulfield.
He's the dish.
What's the link? Is Frenchy the link?
Yeah, he's Frenchy's cousin. It's very tenuous.
But Frenchie's in it, right?
Yeah, Frenchie's in
but
there.
But none of the...
She's kind of on the outskirts.
There's new Pink Ladies, there's new T-Birds.
Stephanie Zanoni, who is Michelle Pfeiffer, who's the coolest girl ever.
And oh, so it's none of the original
no,
cast?
No, none of them, apart from Frenchie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's also not a flying car in this one, is there?
No.
So they've kind of like gone, let's we'll do a sequel, but let's forget about the flying car. We'll just pretend that never happened.
You know the noise that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang makes? Imagine trying to be cool with that going.
Dick Van Dyke didn't have a problem. Dick Van Dyke is the coolest motherfucker
that
I've ever seen.
That's true. What a dancer.
So are they like the next year or something? And then the year below or something?
I think a few, it's like 68 or something. I don't know when.
68?
When is Greece?
So it's the 50s presumably, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
I guess it must be.
Greece was... set in 1956.
Really?
Okay.
I think it's a bit later then.
And the 1961.
That's about 61, probably.
And Grease 2 was set in... of course, Grease was set in 19 in the beginning of the 60s because in the beginning, don't they have a cartoon? What's Grease then?
Hot dog.
Don't they have like the Beatles at the beginning of Grease?
No, 59 was Greece.
Yeah, no. 59, that's what I thought.
The reason I like it is that in the first one, what's her face? Sandy. Tries to change herself to get a bloke, but then Stephanie...
Tries to change herself to get a blowy.
She doesn't change herself, she gets the guy to change.
Ah.
I didn't realise this till I was older, but it was my favourite film of all time.
There we go.
It's brilliant.
Michelle Pfeiffer gets the guy to change.
What? Yes, yeah. The guy changes.
The guy is a nerd though, right?
Yeah.
And so I would have preferred it if Michelle Pfeiffer was a nerd.
Yeah.
And she made the guy.
Yeah, Michael Crawford.
Yeah, she made him.
Maxwell.
Michael Crawford.
Because he was
Michael Crawford.
If he was a cool guy.
Yeah.
And she was a nerd.
Yeah.
I'd prefer it if she tricked him into his untimely death at a canyon.
And then he's just going like. So the guy who's like, he's quite geeky, is he? Maxwell Caulfield.
Yeah,
if they
he's
were both,
kind of.
If they were both he nerds,
they won't let him bowl. That's the main thing. He turns up and he's like, he's been practicing how to ask, "Can I bowl with you?" in three
Can
different
I
ways.
Bowl
yeah,
with
hey
you?
Fellas, are you bowling tonight? Anyone bowling? Anyone? And he's so sweet.
Nah, they've got a song about it. It goes, "Let's bowl,
it
let's bowl, let's rock and roll."
Oh, hey, come on, let's get the show on a roll. It's brilliant. It's really good.
So then he comes in as a geek and says, "Will you let me do some bowling?"
Yeah.
And they go, "No, you geek."
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't do bowling.
Yeah.
And then he does a song about bowling.
Well, they've just done a song about bowling. He's missed the song.
Yo, coaches, you gonna let this kid come bowling with us? Huh?
But it feels like
nah, cuz not sonny. We're not gonna let him come bowling with us.
But they're so
I mean
funny.
To be fair, they don't seem like the coolest guys singing about bowling and like stopping someone from bowling.
Not just that, mate, they're doing splits on the aisles.
Oh, amazing.
So if you saw him you'd be like, oh,
they've
these
got
guys
flick
there.
They've got flick combs.
Not
for
nice.
Their hair. No, flick combs.
Cool guys.
It's so cool. It is so cool.
I saw a film with a flick comb in it. I saw a film with a flick comb in it recently, where there's a guy that gets out a thing and then he
so
does
cool.
And you just like go, they're novelties from a joke shop that I could get.
Yeah.
I just always think that it makes a film look so cheap. One of the telltale signs of a film being cheap for me is if one of the lead actors produces a flick knife that later transpires that it's a comb.
How many films does that?
I would say, just trying to remember scenes, at least four.
Really?
The other thing that I think is a telltale sign for a cheap movie is...
It's certainly in that film that Nick's made where he's a hairdresser.
I didn't make that film. I was in that film.
Made that
she
film.
Made the film. So you're actually insulting our guest. But the other telltale sign if a film is cheap is... if the camera is made of cardboard. And I've been on the set of one or two of those where I've realised, it would be. I'll put my clothes on and leave. I'll just put my clothes back on and go. After I finish, obviously.
And I have my Driven CD soundtrack back as well while I'm at it.
But you have to watch Grease 2.
Maybe I will. It is one of those films that people... It feels like it's one that's... It has come around, right? It's not just you. Lots of people like it.
Lots of people like it. Lots of people are wrong. It's absolutely a piece of shit. even the first film hasn't really aged that well, but the second one is absolutely fucking awful.
There's a bit in a fall-up shelter bed where he tries to have sex with
Let's do it for our country.
Yeah.
Where he tries to rape a woman in a bunker under the pretense that the whole world is going to die and they've got to restart the population.
Right.
Isn't that the scene that you're talking about?
He is very attractive.
Okay, well, I don't really want to get on that.
Is this a message you want to put out?
No, it's not.
Keep it light. Here's a question for you. It's a bit of a serious one. Do you think there ever will be a Grease 3?
Well, yeah, I guess.
Why not?
Maybe that's the feature film that is coming up next.
Who's going to be in it? Who would you cast?
Emma Thompson. Obviously.
That's who? Danny Zuko?
Steve Guttenberg.
And my dad watch it.
I know you would. That's the
problem. I'd cast... Yeah. I'd cast John Travolta, yeah. Olivia Newton-John, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, all of them.
And all of Stockard Channing, or as I say, Stockard Channing. I'm often wrong. I'd cast all of the surviving cast members. And I tell you what, I'd give Mamma Mia Here We Go Again and run for the money.
All of the surviving cast members.
So it would be set in something like 1985.
That would be
great.
But
you could have all the original cast.
Yes.
Mm. Set in 1985.
Everyone's on roller skates.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this would be great.
This is a good movie.
Yeah.
They're all disc jockeys that are working for the BBC. Oh, no, hang on.
No.
What time? We should play a game soon.
No. Why are you always like that? We've got loads of time. Stop playing.
Why are you always like that?
This feels like, it's one of these ones where I feel giddy now.
Oh, do you?
To the point where I'm worried I've got tonsillitis.
I feel giddy.
I've been laughing too much.
You're a big fan of Victoria Wood, are you?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I just thought she was wonderful and she was my main influence comedy wise.
Okay, weird. No, I really love Victoria Wood. My mum was a huge fan.
Really?
Yeah.
I was obsessed with her. Because it didn't occur to me that she was a woman until somebody pointed out, yeah, women are funny, Victoria Wood. And I was like, oh, God, yeah.
I think that's a good thing, though, isn't it?
It's a brilliant thing.
It never occurred to me that Jasper Carrot was a man. But then I did think he was a carrot. So, that was a confusing time.
I remember when Jasper Carrot's daughter is Lucy Davis, isn't she, from The Office?
Yes.
And someone found out apparently once that she was Jasper Carrot's daughter.
Right.
And she went, I had no idea because of the surname. Did you change your name? And she said, no. What makes you think my dad's real name is Jasper Carrot? And that really made me chuckle.
But it's not like a pun, is it?
No, it's just like, a silly name.
It's a silly name.
For a comedian.
I'm going to call myself Jasper Carrot.
Well, you've got to think, it's been a long time since the 70s, and back then we probably all would have had to have a silly surname. Like Bobby Ball isn't called, he didn't just look for a guy called Tommy Cannon to form a double act with.
It might explain why Tommy Cannon wasn't very funny.
He's just a man.
And little and large, similar problem.
But imagine the names Jasper Carrot discarded.
Yeah.
Eddie Large was actually very thin when they first met, and he actually gave himself type 2 diabetes to get ready for opening night.
Eating starch.
It'd be great if Jasper Carrot's real name was Paul Carrot.
What's funny about Paul?
Jasper, that's it, Jasper.
Oh, your throat, though. making me wince just look.
Oh, it is.
And you also like Maid Marian and A Merry Men?
Yeah.
Oh, Jack and Ori with Rick Mayall.
Yeah.
Very
good
much.
Stuff. And what is ahead? We just rattle through
Mick,
it.
Do you like me?
Yes, I like you. I like you.
You tolerate me, right?
I didn't know that Grease 2 was your favourite film.
And, well, it's only one of them.
I also didn't like some of the comments you made about my work ethic earlier. That's put me off you slightly. What's a headless clown called Coco?
What one is that?
What?
A headless clown called Coco.
Oh, that was my childhood toy. Someone asked me, what's your favourite?
Oh, God.
What was your childhood toy?
Is a clown with no head scarier than one with one?
I wasn't scared of it at all. It's only looking back at photographs that I kind of go, oh,
so it
my
has no
God.
Head, just a torso.
Yeah, it was just a torso.
Just
a torso.
Just a torso.
So much blood. Sorry, guys, what are you saying?
Talking about my childhood toy.
It's time to look at the gallery. That's a nice one. Okay. Can you just, like, they don't care that I'm swallowing, right? They care about dead air.
Okay.
Right, so just pick up the fucking slack. Okay. When you see me swallowing, just keep talking.
Don't pause
and wait for me to continue.
Hang on,
we've got to play the game now.
What's the game?
This is the game. Okay.
You're going to bloody love it.
Okay.
Better or worse, we have to say with the next person, is better or worse than the previous person based entirely on my own opinion. That's how you earn points.
On your opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So starting off with Kevin. Kevin Bacon.
Right,
and
what do I do?
Vin Diesel. Is Vin Diesel better or worse than Kevin Bacon?
Worse.
He is worse. 1 point. David Jason. Is he better or worse than Vin Diesel?
Mm-hmm. Better.
I'm going to say better. Better.
Okay.
James Stewart. Better or worse than David Jason?
Better.
Better.
Much better.
Tom Selleck. Better or worse than James Stewart?
Worse.
He is worse.
It's a high card.
It is a high card.
Very high. How are you going to beat this?
Dawn French. Ooh. Better or worse than Tom Selleck?
Oh.
Better.
I think better.
Better. They're both high cards.
They're high cards.
Kirstie Alley. Better or worse than Dawn French?
Worse.
Worse. Correct. Christopher Lloyd. Better or worse?
Better.
Joanna Lumley. Better or worse?
Worse.
Than Christopher Lloyd?
Worse.
I don't know. Sorry, well, sure, is this your opinion?
It's my opinion.
Worse. Christopher Lloyd is the Don.
It's the Don. That's what they say.
Angelica.
He's the Doc, isn't he? Yeah. He's not the Don.
Very different film.
Angelica Houston. Better or worse than Joanna Lumley?
Oh, better.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a high scoring one.
She put up with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's the end of the game.
And she's the daughter of
John Huston. Well done, Sean. I thought that was very good.
Okay, so did I get all right?
I think you did, like, really well, right?
Nine.
Wow.
Nine.
That's amazing.
You've got the same score as Michael Legg and Solomon Grey, the band.
That's really good. And Solomon Grey is two people, so that's 4.5 each.
I'm really proud
of
myself.
She says I've only said nine. Hang on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
The only person that you've not done as well as is John Niven, but you've literally done better than... Are we going to do it? No. Everyone else that's ever been in. That's a really good score.
Oh, thanks.
That's a really good score for you.
Yeah, well, Nathaniel's quite easy
ten.
To read.
It's 10. Recount.
Wow.
You got a 10?
Do I get a prize?
Well, you got a free tea.
What?
Yeah.
You got a 10.
That's great.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I guess all we've got time to do now is have another 15-minute Q&A, and then we're out of here. Now we've got to go because there's another show that's
going to
come
on. This is a song of your choice, I believe.
This is a song of your choice. Yeah. Do you want to introduce your favourite song of all time?
Well, it's quite sweary, so
it's all right. It's
I apologise. But it's about it's a Super Furry Animal song, and it's about how governments let everyone down and they're all murderers and liars, which is a Bill Hicks line.
There you go.
Oh. Well, sorry about that.
Sorry, guys.
Well, bless the wrong one. I was going to be so slick as well.
That was good. It was a good start.
We need one more out.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone. What are we supposed to do?
Anyone that you want to say hello to before we leave?
I'd just like to say hello to my husband, Rod.
Oh, God.
He's not listening.
Well... That's sickening and crushing all at once. Here's your fucking song.
Spend some days in stormy weather, and the clouds of my dilemma. Now there's nothing much to do. It's a turn out in front of televisions.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.